This is the takeaway for Friday, July 3rd, 2015.
Floor 1. Doors open.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Oh, say, can you see, begins the first line of the national anthem. And this hour, we will take you up to where you can see forever. This 4th of July holiday show wishes you all the best and asks a simple question. How did the World Trade Center in New York become such a mecca for patriotism? In this hour, Tales from the Towers. Everybody sees it, the patriotism. Everyone saw something of what happened here at the World Trade Center in 2001. I watched it. We all did. In the days after the attack, a president stood amongst the wreckage, calling out to the dead, the workers, the American people, calling out to the world.
For the families who mourn, this nation stands with the good people of New York City and New Jersey and Connecticut as we mourn the loss of thousands of our citizens. I can hear you!
And that's when it happened, I think. From about that moment on, September 14th, after a few days of complete shock, this became a place about flags and the people who fight on behalf of those flags. Two wars were fought because of what happened here. Thousands died because of what happened here. And they're still dying. And still they come by the thousands to see this place every day.
Seattle.
Ireland.
Tampa, Florida.
Dominican.
Maryland.
England.
Arizona.
South Carolina.
Mexico City.
Queens, New York.
They come to visit this place that is part memorial, part transportation hub, part monument to industrial might, part promise of a future that people come here to see. An America that after years of patience and work is off those bended knees, upright and strong. It's hard to know exactly what you are looking at here. The USA chants are gone, but you can still find people dressed in flags.
We love America. We love our country. We love America. We love our country.
Hey, it's a beautiful day, United States of America. Whatever your dreams are, get out and do them. Don't be afraid of anything. Just go for it, America. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.
At the corner of Church and Vesey Streets, Mark Anthony Hall sells his patriotic songs and accepts donations from busy commuters and wandering tourists. This is a place like no other in New York City. Steel and glass towers all around you, brand new. The new Tower 7 was built first. Then the crystal dart that is Building 1, towering over the whole city, the new Freedom Tower, the tallest building in the USA. Across the plaza is the new Tower 4, open for business. Tower 3 is rising now, and soon Tower 2 will start. On this Friday before the 4th of July, a visit to a place that has acquired an aura of patriotism like no other place in American history. We will meet workers, engineers, and tourists. There is even patriotism in the pipes in these buildings.
Well, we protect the health of the nation. That's our saying. That's our logo, of course. Absolutely. If we don't install something right, use the wrong material, if it has any kind of contaminant in it, you could kill people. So, yeah, absolutely patriotic.
Yes, we'll meet some plumbers. This hour, we will also meet developers and artists and a wizard of finance. Why is there so much patriotism here? One engineer told me it's like Pearl Harbor. It's their Pearl Harbor, he said, referring to soldiers he's given tours to. Soldiers who have so many questions about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but find a kind of clarity here.
Well, I remember one several years ago. He was a young fellow. He had some severe injuries, but survived. And I said, soldier, I said, you wanted to visit the site and visit. I said, we're going up to the top of World Trade Center. We're going to take you up. And he says, thank you, sir. I'd love to go. And this fellow obviously had a lot of injuries, but he was so passionate about what we were doing and wanted to be a part of it. He was overwhelmed with the fact that we encouraged him to do that, and he truly was a soldier and was never complaining about his injuries, never even referred to. In fact, it was the opposite. He was worried about us and wanted to make sure we knew that he was behind us and supported us. that moment was probably one of the most special moments I've ever had in my career and at the World Trade Center.
That's Steve Plate, Deputy Chief of Capital Planning and Director of the World Trade Center Construction Department at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. He says he found the patriotism in this place a long time ago.
It's so rich with patriotism and the goodness of humankind. And you look at the site and where it was and where it is today, it shows the world's ability, people's ability, to rebuild, be resilient, remember, and just come back better than ever. We collectively, when I say we, all the men and women, the unions, the engineers, the contractors, the people financing, supporting it, have truly made it a mission to accomplish that. And it's not just New York, New Jersey. It's also the country and the world. People are supporting us and seeing what we're doing. And the Port Authority has really been at the forefront of that.
How is that message different from the 4th of July you grew up with?
I think the difference was the world was different. Everything was black and white and static. And, yeah, the 4th of July was a day off. But I think people are becoming more sensitive to what it truly means. Many of the soldiers that have fought for us to protect this country, this great country, asked to come to the site, and we welcome them. They come to us, and it's very heartfelt, and I get goosebumps talking about it because I'm so humbled to meet them, because they'll come in with, obviously, really some very traumatic injuries, and they'll thank us and thank me for the wonderful job that we're doing. And we look at them and say, no, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be able to do this. You are our soldiers. You are our leaders who are allowing us to get this wonderful project done.
We talked to so many soldiers over the last, you know, getting on to be 20 years now, who say the moment of 9/11 was when I knew I had to sign up, and their life changed, and they enrolled in some military program or enlisted in the Army or one of the services and went over to Iraq and went to Afghanistan. And they come back, and so many of them have a lot of questions about the mission and what happened and why maybe their buddies were lost. But it is about this place that they can really relate to, that's why I went. That's why I went. Do you think they get answers to those questions of what it was all about when they come back here and tour the site with you?
Absolutely find answers, and I can't speak for them, but you could see it in their face. You could see it in their eyes. They thank us. They embrace us, and it gets very emotive at times, and rightfully so. The families, the wives, the children hug us and thank us, and we hug them and truly bond. And you can't put it into words. It's just that moment in time where you know it's all right and you know things are good.
What do you remember about this site before 9/11, 2001?
Well, it was a hustling, bustling. I was here as a young man as far back as in the 70s. And
nothing patriotic about it back then, though.
No, it was mostly commercial at that point. And it wasn't a bad thing. It was typical typical development-type site. It was done to rejuvenate. If you look at the history books, it was done to rejuvenate Lower Manhattan to compete with Midtown. But things changed on that day, and it truly became what you're referring to, that patriotic site. And while this was all being built, we had 100,000 people walking and entering through PATH, truly an engineering feat. Tower 2. Is now, you know, as you're looking, like it will have a place in history. And on and on and on. The park, I mean, really we built a city within the city, and we're very proud of that. And, you know, you look at us as individuals, and we're all part of a fabric of, we hope, of something very special we've done right by everyone.
How did it transform the site as you watched what happened on that day?
Initially, it was a rescue and recovery. And then, you know, everything unfolded. The book was being written as it developed. I mean, things that happened had never been anticipated, no matter how forward-thinking you could have been. And at that point, after the event happened, kind of the moments of this death and dying, mm-hmm. you know, not believing,
denial,
and people, we all had to go through that, and we buried a lot of people. Then we'd say, wake up in the morning, say, did this really happen? But then you'd look out the, you know, as you're driving up to work, you'd look up and you'd see nothing was there, so you kind of kept reminding you. So it took a while, as does a death in a family, to kind of assimilate it where you can put your brain around it and grasp it in totality. And that was a long period. That was a long period. There was a lot of those type of events or memorials. Then there was let's clean the site up, which was obviously a Herculean task. And then it was let's do a worldwide evaluation of what best to do. And looking back in history, how it was decided to build the two towers, kind of, I'll call it reverse planning or reverse engineering. Let's build two towers and everything else falls into place over time. This was let's get the full master plan together and then move forward with that plan. And that was the worldwide competition. The winner of that competition was presented by Daniel Lieberskin. That became the model, and then the individual pieces were broken out and continued. It was decided that the Port Authority, as the economic engine, as the entity, the master builder, and it was our site, that we should continue and get it done. And we embarked upon, took the master plan, broke its component, and began that construction at approximately 2006. The one thing we knew, we had to be resilient, never lose our focus, have that moral compass always pointing true north, and keep plowing through.
Steve, thanks so much.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Steve Plate is the Chief of Capital Planning and Director for the World Trade Center Construction Department at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which is a long way of saying he's overseeing the entire construction project. And coming up, the workers who are building this place in Lower Manhattan.
Like I said, it's just in the building, us just merging together, getting it done. At that point, it wasn't another job. We had to get this back up. Everybody wanted to be there. So I would think that's the difference. It wasn't like a job. It's like we all wanted to be there. We all wanted to bring it back for all the same reasons and all different reasons. There were a lot of guys there that were vets, had family at the World Trade. It's just a piece of you as a New Yorker is just trying to make yourself whole again in that way.
That's coming up next. And also, we'll hear about some of the places where you find patriotism all around the United States.
This is Darren from Bozeman, Montana. Nothing compares to the pride and humility every American feels at Arlington National Cemetery. To see the rows and rows of white tombstones reaching into the distance gives you just a small glimpse into the sacrifice made by the men and women interred there.
This is The Takeaway. 15 years ago, what would have been here if we were at ground zero?
Pile of steel and rubble and confusion and chaos.
Longtime construction superintendent Frank Hussey.
This is the big job in town, you know, for our union. It's a, you know what I'm saying? So everybody glad that this is going on.
The big job in town, says ironworker Gavin Nash, and it has been the big job for more than a decade. From cleanup to site preparation, from the arguments between architects and developers and mayors, the World Trade Center has put thousands of people to work from all over the world in New York City.
They have a lot of work, all the trades, everybody down inside of here.
Ironworker Gavin Nash.
I'm a safety representative, and I work for Pro Safety Services. Hard job, yes.
Yeah.
It's rewarding, though, when everybody goes home safe at the end of the day.
Safety engineer Don DeRosia.
I've been down here for 4 years now, and I feel very proud to be working on this job site. Started off at the fountain, went to Tower 1, and now I'm here at Tower 3.
Union plumber Danny Siglio. We watched Danny fitting the pipe skeleton of one of the ladies' bathrooms inside Tower 3. Thousands of moving parts, from architectural drawings to steel, concrete, bolts, and glass. We spoke with construction superintendent Frank Hussey right in the middle of the action here at Tower 3.
He's watched everything since just days after the attack. We also spent some time with Union carpenter Estelle St. Clair offsite. She joined the crew in 2003.
After the rescue and the cleanup, we had to rebuild the PAF station. That had to be rebuilt, so that's why I was there. That's the first time I was back.
Right now we have four towers basically up, Tower 7, Tower 1, and Tower 4, and obviously Tower 3 on its way right now. So that's a big accomplishment and a lot to celebrate, really, from the devastation to now.
It was still 2 years later, but for me, I was still in a state of disbelief. You know, I'd be in the hole because at that time we all were in the hole. And you just look up and just think, like, I cannot believe the buildings aren't here. I just can't believe it.
It represents freedom. Being the tallest building and created from the dust and rise above all that 9/11 era. And, you know, there for the world to see that it's a rebirth and, you know, new life.
Now you have the buildings, people can see at least 4 and 1, Tower 1 and Tower 4, that people could see. So even for years, while I was on 4, people were still frustrated. Like, when are we going to see something? And there was a lot of work going on beneath the surface.
Probably it's going to take a while to really sit in and to really reflect to see that I've been down here all these years. I don't imagine what it's going to be like. I can't imagine because, you know, every day you get up and you're in motion and you're going through. I mean, here it is. I was at Tower 7, move on to Tower 1, Tower 4, here at Tower 3, so you just keep going. So you don't even have time to stop to think and reflect.
Now, you know, it's there. It's beautiful. Just to come down there. I mean, I'm a lover of construction and buildings and structures, so I'm always in awe looking up at them. But to see that, it's so much more than a beautiful structure. It means so much more.
Take a breath of fresh air and to reflect. I went through 14 years and didn't really realize what was going on.
You know, to see the vets come out, the families, especially around like Memorial Day weekend and September 11th when all the families are out there. And then just on the regular days when people are out there, all the tourists, and they're asking like, wow, you know, is this the World Trade Center 4?
Yeah, it's amazing to know that you've seen destruction turn into resurrection and new life and rebirth and all that. So it's going to be a wonderful feeling. It's going to be some mixed feelings as well.
You know, a lot of times, sometimes people can't believe this was where the site was. And, you know, you have to explain to them, yeah, this is exactly where it was.
If you ever visit the World Trade Center, it is likely that at some point you will see or touch something built by carpenter Estelle St. Clair of Union Local 157 or longtime construction superintendent Frank Hussey. Patriotism, of course, is not confined to any one place. It's where you found it.
Virginia Ling Pease from Pennsylvania, but originally from New York. The place I feel most patriotic is in New York Harbor, with the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island heralding the immigrants who worked so hard to get here. Now the new Liberty Tower looks over it all, and I can ride the Staten Island Ferry for free.
Hi, this is Frank calling from Philadelphia, and the most patriotic place that I see is, I live in Philadelphia, and I get to drive past Independence Hall, and I'm just always amazed that the forefathers of our country just built everything that we know to be our life within those four walls. Happy 4th of July.
This is Kitty Hartwig from St. Louis, Missouri. The place that makes me feel patriotic is the Naval World War II Memorial in Newport, Rhode Island. I never knew my uncle, but the first time I saw his name on that memorial was the first time I truly understood what it felt like to be proud of your country.
This is Richard Gong calling from San Antonio. The times when I've been to the Vietnam Memorial in D.C., I recall the mantra, my country, right or wrong, right on. And there you lament loss and misdirection. It was a time of great turmoil. but still looking back with pride on those who served, with a lot of misgivings. But I feel really great about our country when I stand there and I look at those names.
Hi, this is Mark Manheimer. I'm calling from Bradford, Massachusetts. I would say the Statue of Liberty is probably the thing that makes me feel most patriotic. I was born in the Bronx and grew up in New York. When I was a child, I remember going there and climbing up the arm to the torch. My mother was an immigrant from Austria, came to New York in 1921, and told me about the joy of seeing the Statue of Liberty for the first time when entering New York Harbor, so it's always been special to me. Thank you, and happy 4th of July.
Wish your country a happy 4th of July by telling us what's patriotic about where you are. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, brain training designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 60 million people worldwide. With personalized training programs to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving. Learn more at Lumosity.com. And Curious.com, committed to helping people learn more than 15,000 skills like Hungarian, hula hooping, and HTML. Curious.com, grow your skills. Learn more at Curious.com/PRI.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, and happy 4th of July to everyone. We're going to take a pause now in this search for all the red, white, and blue at the World Trade Center to let you in on another search, another kind of pilgrimage, very personal. It's a wheelchair pilgrimage. And even though the old Twin Towers were often criticized for being not enough like the rest of New York City, that's why I loved them. They were accessible for wheelchairs everywhere, in the subways, the plazas, and the elevators. Oh, the elevators. I used to come down here a long time ago just to ride in the fastest elevator in the city, the old Windows on the World elevator, 107 stories. Losing it in the tragedy of 2001 was a minor sniffle, I suppose, in a much deeper tragedy. But one thing I discovered while spending a perfect summer day down here is that there are oceans of brand new elevators everywhere. Like the brand new elevator in the Freedom Tower that delivers a time-lapse movie of the building of Manhattan in 47 seconds on its trip from the ground floor to the 102nd floor. I took a few moments to ride as many of these elevators at the World Trade Center as I could, to fly up and down Lower Manhattan, a wheelchair paradise through clouds of glass and ladders of concrete. Here I go.
Doors closing.
These elevators all talk, and you push no buttons anywhere except a key in the floor where you're going. The wall tells you what elevator to get into. The elevator knows where you want to go. It works. So here in this quiet, raw space, it's exactly what the old Twin Tower view used to be, although we're about halfway up. Cranes all over the place downtown. The water. This is the perfect day for being here, that's for sure.
Doors closing.
The views just get better and better. On floor 57 of Tower 4, there is no tenant, just raw space.
Yeah, we'll take it, but not exactly an apartment I can afford.
And on this floor, there's an outside terrace to beat all outside terraces. You can hear the wind, you can feel the wind, but sitting right here, against a wall of glass with a city all around, it's like you're lost in a dream. Is it cloud? Is it in the sky or is it on the building? You can't really tell. That is the weirdest echo. I'm completely in the open. A silent elevator takes us back down and we end our trip in perhaps the slowest elevator in the city. It's in Tower 3. You might say that all of the sleek, speedy little elevators are the children of these slow, loud construction elevators that preceded them. Little more than cages on cables, they take us up to the unfinished, open boxes of air. Rooms yet unbuilt. No windows, no doors. Just space.
It's completely open here. No walls. Just this orange,
netting. Come over to the edge. You look down, absolutely nothing keeping you from falling. And there, it's the whole site just spread out. 10 years ago, this was empty. 13 years ago, this was a pile. 14 years ago, it was a burning pile. Today, it's raw space. There is a kind of hope here. Seeing all of this construction, everything new and working, it's kind of rare to see in New York, so covered with the fingerprints of industry and commerce and just plain filth all the time. I feel a twinge for the old towers, but a bigger warmth for this new space, a dream city, where because the tragedy belonged to so many, so does the dream. And so, these are my elevators, folks. You know, you should come down and ride them sometime.
This land is your land. This land is my land.
Look at a map. You can't find anything that says patriotic anywhere from California to the New York Island, but it's there. And you found it everywhere.
This is Victoria Torres, and I'm calling from Austin, Texas. What makes me feel patriotic the most is when I'm driving through my hometown in Troy, Texas. And when I look at the back roads that are full of fields, full of crops and cows, there's something about that view that just gets me every time.
Hi, my name is Anna. I'm calling from Cahokia, Illinois. I think one of the most patriotic places in our country is the border crossing station in Pembina, North Dakota. There's no greater feeling than knowing you're back in the United States of America.
My name is Carla Fleming. I'm calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Valley Forge National Park gives me the goosebumps and makes me feel so very patriotic. I live right outside the park, and when I need inspiration or courage, I just take a long walk and meditate on how this great nation was created.
Hey, this is Jack Donahue in Boston. Fenway Park is my most patriotic place. Living in Boston is a nonstop patriotic environment. When I get to Fenway Park, reaching out, and I put my hand over my heart, touching me, I'm bucket. Touching you,
sweet Caroline. And perhaps that thought is why so many of you could find that patriotism without even having to leave home.
Hi, my name is Emily English from Little Rock, Arkansas. I feel patriotic when I'm standing next to my husband in his military uniform, because I know why he puts it on, that it is an outpouring of his heart, that he fights for our country, but also for his fellow soldiers, that he fights because most of us don't. Speaking as a liberal feminist pacifist, he rocks my world. It's one of the main reasons that I love him. To me, this represents patriotism, and I am reminded of the deeper responsibility and accountability that comes with living in and being from this country.
My name is Jeremy from Dallas, Texas, and my front porch makes me feel patriotic. I sit on my front porch with a mason jar of sweet tea, and I think, I love this country. I love to be free and own land and not be fearful of my safety or well-being on a day-to-day basis. God bless America.
Hi, this is Pamela from Floyd's Knobs, Indiana. The place that makes me feel patriotic is my neighborhood, watching all the kids on their bikes and their wagons all decorated for the 4th of July. Can't beat it.
Took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America.
For a lot of you, it's just hitting the road that does it.
Hi, this is Paul from China Township, Michigan. And to me, I was just driving down the road the other night. Had the window down in my truck, the radio cranking, looking at the beautiful farms. And I couldn't help but think, this is still the best country in the world to live. And I'm blessed to be here.
My name is Jane Moorhead, and I'm from Dublin, California. The place that makes me feel patriotic is Washington, D.C., not necessarily because it is the seat of our government, but because it is steeped in our history. The Smithsonian, the war and presidential memorials, and the archives all combine to remind me of the greatness and the stumbles of our nation.
This is Andrea Girolamo from Hudson, New York. My patriotic place where I feel the most love for our country is when I cross the Whitestone Bridge from the Bronx to Queens and see its full panorama of the Manhattan skyline. I'll forever remember crossing it for the first time after 9/11. I was in college north of the city, and I was desperate to see my family on Long Island. The first time I crossed, there was the plume, and then the next time, there were the beams of light in tribute. And now, there's one World Trade. I swell with emotion at the sight of it, and I think that's the closest I ever get to patriotic.
This is Jay from New Jersey. The place that makes me feel patriotic is the World Trade Center site. I have the entire skyline of Manhattan from my condo in North Jersey. So the Freedom Tower is beautiful. The Twin Towers made the skyline. For a while after the tragedy, everyone was an American. That really makes me feel patriotic.
From America's rivers of highway to the towers of glass, coming up back to the World Trade Center to speak with someone who actually has an office there and thinks about world trade every waking moment.
This land is your land.
Once upon a time, there was nothing patriotic about the World Trade Center site. It was a symbol of American gridlock, squabbling and arguing over what to do with a place that meant so many different things to so many different people. By 2009, with nothing but a big hole in the ground, developer Larry Silverstein, who owned the rights to rebuild at Ground Zero, said he was nearly ready to simply forget the whole thing.
In point of fact, we have finally gotten disgusted with the pace of activity or inactivity. Port had certainly obligations with respect to delivery of infrastructure so that we could build our buildings. They didn't deliver the sites to us, which they were obligated to do. They didn't start the infrastructure in a timely fashion. At the rate it's going, it's not going to be done in a timely way.
But that has all changed, and it's hard to find anyone frustrated at the headquarters of Silverstein Properties in the new Tower 7. These offices have become an architectural factory.
Doing a study on the core for the egress stairs to see if an emergency, if all works. Basically, that's depending on the slab, what you have, that's the distance you need in each one.
So that determines whether you can exit using the stairs.
Using the stairs. If an emergency, you can leave the stairs and everyone can evacuate quickly.
Architectural firms are required to work on-site to get every drawing perfect. Millions of drawings, thousands of offices, hundreds of architects whose updated measurements will soon be seen out their office windows as Tower 2 finally rising.
You know, the World Trade Center means a lot to a lot of people. To me, this is an area that we managed to rebuild and recreate a better version of New York.
With trouser creases that could slice titanium, Dara McQuillan is the very sharply dressed chief marketing and communications officer of Silverstein Properties.
Out of the tragedy of 9/11, we've done something which I think a lot of people thought was impossible. We've turned this place into a neighborhood where people want to live and work, and it's the best version of a neighborhood that exists, I believe, in America. You can do whatever you want in Lower Manhattan. Within one square mile, you don't even have to leave.
People thought that the memorial aspect of this place would encroach upon the commercial aspects and that they wouldn't be compatible. What have you discovered?
The Memorial Park doesn't tell you how to think about this place. It's a place to visit and learn about what happened on 9/11, but it's also a place to take a walk or pass through, just like any other park in New York. Clearly a place of great remembrance, but also very much part of the future of the city, and I think that's what worked out really well.
You're about to reopen the Greenwich Street that hasn't been a passageway here since before the Twin Towers were built. What's the meaning of that?
You know, the new World Trade Center was designed to fit into the city grid and be part of New York, unlike the Superblock, which was designed in the 1960s. In a couple of months or a couple of years, the rest of the streets and sidewalks will open once we finish construction on our new buildings. And this will be very much part like any part of New York.
Do you ever eat lunch at Stage Door Deli?
I have had lunch at Stage Door Deli, absolutely.
That's old school.
Yes, it is. And look at Odeon up the street. Old school as well, but it's become one of the most popular places for the Condé Nast editors to eat. You know, who knew? If you go into Stage Door Deli now, half of the workers are construction workers working on the project, and half are people like me. We're just office workers who work in these buildings. You go in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's kids coming home from school, You go a little later in the evening, it's people coming down to have a snack before they eat, before they go out. It's a little bit of everything.
It's strange down here, people say. It's unsettling. It's beautiful. It's a memorial. It's a cemetery. It's a futuristic city. Is it all of the above?
I think it's a little bit of everything, but it's also Tribeca. If you cast your memory back 15 years ago to the late 90s, and you came to Lower Manhattan in the evening or on the weekends, what would you see?
No, nothing.
Nothing. Today, it's completely the opposite. This is probably the most happening part in New York right now. It's a place where young creative people want to be.
I try to get in early, before 7 a.m., and that's when all the construction crews start to... Well, they're already here. I think that's pretty amazing. I mean, if you just look outside the window and you just see all the scaffolding and these cranes that are 60 stories high and all the men and women who are part of the rebuilding, that's very powerful to be around that.
Young Gerald Lamb, who just moved into his brand new offices in Tower 4, has no creases in his pants, and his t-shirt has no collar.
Why is it so powerful? It's just a construction site, right? You wouldn't feel that way if it was 55th Street in Midtown, right?
I don't know. I mean, just the imagery alone, like upwards, you know? After all the hurt that's associated with this area, just to see progress and then things going higher. I don't know. It's great to see all these men and women employed contributing to this area and building something of permanence. Like, that's very powerful.
Gerald is part of a team from startup IEX, building a financial exchange he hopes will compete directly with the legends of Wall Street, the New York Stock Exchange, and the NASDAQ, 20th century hard wire and paper dinosaurs that had to shut down for days after the attacks in 2001.
I have full respect for, you know, the architects and the planners who laid the space. I think it's wonderful, but I do think after 9/11, this space is global in a way, like global community, because if you walk outside and you walk through among the reflection ponds, there's people from all over. And they come for many different reasons, but I like to think one of the reasons is to sort of participate in this community co-healing process and reflection process. So in that regard, I don't think it's as American, but I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
Tech, in a sense, is the new patriotism, he says. Gerald Lamb and the rest of the employees at IEX are developing a trading platform that lives in the cloud and could barely be imagined 15 years ago.
We hope we are sort of symbolizing a new wave of company that's attracted to downtown, whether they were Wall Street firms to begin with, or perhaps they're outsider firms or just startup firms looking to challenge Wall Street. That's sort of that fine line that we straddle, outsider insiders.
Gerald Lamb from IEX is still moving into his brand new offices in Tower 4. We also spoke with Dara McQuillan, Chief Marketing and Communications Officer for Silverstein Properties. On the 66th floor of Tower 4, in the raw, unrented, dusty space without ceilings or floors, sits a grand piano. Playing it is an artist who's been given this space to document the rebuilding of the World Trade Center in paintings, in photographs, and in sound. This studio of artist Marcus Robinson is a sanctuary of light and space, and a museum to preserve little pieces of a place being reborn. It's quiet, like a museum at night.
It's just heart-opening, awe-inspiring. It feels healing in a way because you're above the city, and it helps make sense of something that's otherwise incomprehensible and beyond the human scale.
All around here are sheets of plywood made into easels, smudged with paint, canvases stacked, cans of film, and hard drives of digital pictures. They are Marcus's main mission here, a remarkable film project that in time-lapse photography shows all at once the energy of all the people and workers, some we've spoken to, and many more, laboring for 14 years, including Marcus Robinson, and energy exploding all at once out of the ground in Lower Manhattan.
We're talking about four of the world's tallest buildings in one spot.
We're like cowboys up there. We get to do what we want.
We're up there, you know, flying around, sometimes on 1 foot, grabbing a piece.
These buildings represent something to people. The end of an era and the beginning of a new one.
The film is called Rebuilding the World Trade Center.
you know, you can never really see all the people down there, but you know they're there. It's sort of quite a comforting place to be.
People talk about this place as having some kind of patriotic American spirit sense to it. Do you see that?
One of the things that for me symbolizes New York City is that it's a place that has welcomed people from all around the world, and people from many different countries have come and lived here and contributed their spirit and their love to the creation of the city. And I think if ever a city can stand for something powerful, it's diversity and people working together as one with a common purpose.
That's a kind of freedom.
Yeah, no, I do think that's a real sense of freedom. I think transcending the idea of national boundaries and division and separation and ethnic boundaries and racial boundaries, that's real freedom. And I think that's hopefully where the world is evolving to, despite the apparent sort of terrible things that are happening both in America and around the world at the moment.
How did you get this gig here? This is amazing.
When 9/11 happened, I was living in London and making films about urban transformation that has a sort of more sacred and spiritual feel. And I knew that I wanted to try and do something here. And it was so strong, it was like a calling. It was like a voice that was guiding me to want to come here. So I didn't really know where to start. And just bit by bit, you know, called some people. In fact, the first person I spoke to was Daniel Libeskind's wife, Nina Libeskind, who was totally amazing. She really got the idea of the project. You know, the idea of making more like an allegorical tale about this, the whole rebuilding. And she invited us over to talk and meet Daniel. And then bit by bit, we met a lot of other people. And then it took 4.5 years of sort of being told, no, that would never be possible, and persevering. And then the miracle happened of when the construction was really beginning. It was actually my friend Darren McQuillan at Silverstein Properties who had somehow managed to bring people together to give me a chance to get started. So I've been sort of filming, drawing, and painting the transformation of the site for the last 9 years.
Do you remember the first picture you took, the first time you pressed the shutter?
Yeah, absolutely. It was because when you have a dream in your mind for so long, and then a day comes when one part of that dream comes into life, I'll never forget. It was when they were literally just starting the foundations of Tower One, and there were these giant excavators and machines digging into the bedrock. And I was standing there just with my little camera, my 35mm Camaflex Eclair camera, and just really breathing in, being present in the moment and thinking that this was a complete miracle to be there.
And 9 years later, how many frames have you snapped?
Many, many, many hours. I mean, I've
millions and millions.
Certainly millions, yeah, many millions. And I mean, there's about 160 hours of footage, which I guess in a way is not that much because obviously I've been using the film carefully. But, you know, when it comes to editing that down to a 1.5 hour film, as we did for the version that went out on the History Channel, that's a huge job.
When you look out at the view, you see this beauty and this kind of miraculous aerial. It's like you're flying. And when you look at the site from far away, you see this stately, big architectural development.
Yeah.
But when you look at those frames speeded up, it's only there you see the energy of the place.
Yeah.
It's like it's hidden and it comes out.
Yeah. I mean, it's miraculous to see time passing, to see many years passing literally in front of your own eyes. And, I mean, I think getting to your point about energy, one of the things that is very striking is the amount of human energy there is on the site. I think a lot of people don't realize that so much of construction is still done by hand. And the men and women who are actually physically on the site bending their backs under the weight of it all, they devote huge amounts of hours every day of their lives to doing this very physical, tough work. And in a way, what I always really wanted as well was that the film would honor the different trades and would also honor the faces of some of the men and women who, once the project's finished, their faces will never be seen again. So it's also bringing humanity and human stories to these sort of giant towering buildings that obviously on one side can symbolize something very corporate and very powerful and very majestic in the city, but juxtaposing that and balancing it with something that's very poignant and ephemeral and human, I think, is quite an interesting tension.
It's bigger than America, this place.
So many things celebrate the shared humanity that we all have. And I think as artists, if we can do anything that works towards that, I think that's a very exciting and beautiful thing to be doing. Hmm.
Filmmaker Marcus Robinson's time-lapse film, Rebuilding the World Trade Center, will be done when construction finally ends here in 2018. One more thing before we go. Remembering back to the wreckage of the original Twin Towers, I can recall a line from the late Japanese architect Minoru Yamasaki, who designed those towers. World Trade Center should, because of its importance, become a representation of man's belief in humanity, his need for individual dignity, his beliefs in the cooperation of men, and through cooperation, his ability to find greatness. Those old towers and their uneasy place in a lower Manhattan that is long gone now never really achieved that ideal at Yamasaki's. But here in this place, where so many people are committed to turning a page, moving forward, you get the feeling of wars being over.
This is Jesse from Stoughton. It's not places, but rather persons that make me feel patriotic. The closest that comes to it are when touring the monuments of Washington, D.C., and remembering the arguments and struggles of great people that led to the foundations and civil rights changes of our nation.
Of a people moving on in a spirit of cooperation, while not forgetting sacrifices of the past.
I think they see a war that I was won. I think they say, you know, the war was ugly, but they actually won the battle because evil was just temporary. You know, it came, it destroyed, but just rebuilding now and new life and the place is full of hope and prosperity and all of that. It's a win-win.
And it is a peaceful place, a hopeful place. There is greatness here.
Floor one.
It's not exactly a 4th of July fireworks display, but I'll take it.
Doors open.
Have a happy 4th of July. Our thanks for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaway comes from the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. The Takeaway's resilience reporting is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. For more, go to rockfound.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.